Okay, so moving on to text number four. If someone there would like to just sing it and then read the translation, please.
You want us to do what, sir?
You could sing the verse and read the translation.
Yatmavidyam
Akhyaya Swayam Akhyaya Swayam
Samshidra
Mahapursham Samshidra
Mahapursham Anusamara
Anusamara.
Let's do the word for word. So this is
Together?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yahoo King Pratiha Atma Vidyam Akhyaya. To instructing many people about self-realization, Swayam personally, Samshuddha, very advanced and purified self-realization, Mahapurusham, supreme personality of Godhead Vishnu,
Anusasmara,
perfectly understood and always remembered.
Okay, I'll read the translation. So King Pratiha, so he's one of the persons that's mentioned in the lineages, personally propagated the principles of self-realization. In this way, not only was he purified, but he became a great devotee of the Supreme Person Lord Vishnu and directly realized him. Purport. The word anusasmara is very significant. God consciousness is not imaginary or concocted. The devotee who is pure and advanced realizes God as he is. Maharaj Pratiha did so, and due to his direct realization of Lord Vishnu, he propagated self-realization and became a creature. A real creature cannot be bogus. He must first of all realize Lord Vishnu as he is. As confirmed in Bhagavad Gita 4.34, upadikshyantite jnanam jnaninas tattvadarshinam. One who has seen the truth can impart knowledge. The word tattvadarshi refers to one who has perfectly realized the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Such a person can become a guru and propound Vaishnava philosophy all over the world. The paragon of bona fide preachers and guru is King Pratiha. Can someone define paragon?
Cardinals. Ideal.
Yeah. Yeah, so a perfect example, a topmost example of a bona fide preacher and guru is King Pratiha. So, and it's notable that there's this long list of names in the Bhagavatam, right? All these verses are discussing different children of the children and so on. And then this verse is dedicated to this one person who has become this perfect example of what it means to be a guru. So that's notable too, that he gets a verse for himself, you know, because his qualities are so important. So, Om Jnana Chandradasya, Jnana Jnana Shalapaya, Chakshu. So today's class is on the topic I was given for this class is the qualifications of guru. So first, I wanted to mention that there's a verse from Lord Chaitanya. Lord Chaitanya encouraged all of his followers to become gurus and spread the mission of Lord Chaitanya. Krishna. So there's a couple of nice quotes where Prabhupada is mentioning this verse of Lord Chaitanya from lectures, and so I wanted to start off by reading those. So Prabhupada says,
Prabhupada said, Jai Krishna
Tattva Veda Se Guru Hai, right? And so this is from Chaitanya Charitamrita 8.128. And then Prabhupada says, anyone who knows the science of Krishna, he can become guru. That is our mission. That is Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's mission. So it doesn't matter, you Europeans, Americans, although not born in Brahmana family, it doesn't matter. That is Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's approval. If you try to understand the science of Krishna, then, and if you behave properly, you can teach about Krishna all over your country, all over the world. That is my mission, and that is approved by Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Try to understand the science of Krishna, then you will be able to preach nicely and people will be benefited. So he's making it very simple. So Lord Chaitanya said this beautiful verse of anyone who knows the science of Krishna can become a spiritual master and should go out and preach. And Prabhupada is then saying there's no material qualification that can impede that. You can be American, European, Indian, Chinese, African. You can be from any background. So it's not dependent on some kind of caste system where you have to be from a Brahmana family. As long as you understand the science of Krishna, you can go out and spread that and become a guru. So second quote, Prabhupada says, in this quote, Prabhupada's saying, he's expressing a doubt that someone might ask, right? That one of you might ask, so I shall become guru? What shall I do? I do not know anything. And then Prabhupada says, no, you haven't got to know anything. You simply repeat the instruction of Bhagavad Gita. Whomever you meet, you try to convince him or her, I'm adding the her, then you are a guru. So our mission is this, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's. We're trying to execute the order of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. We don't say anything else except what is described in Bhagavad Gita. Bhagavad Gita says, Krishna says, always think of me. Simple thing. Is it a very difficult task? No. So I wanted to present this as a beginning because there's different categories of guru that we're going to be discussing. But first of all, Prabhupada is laying out this foundation that anyone who knows the science of Krishna, even a little bit, can then impart that to others and become a spiritual teacher, right? Because guru is someone who can help you on your spiritual path. Someone who could open our eyes, but we have these cataracts of material conditioning, and the guru can cut those cataracts out and fix your vision, and help you see what's really important. So it's not dependent on any material education, on economic backgrounds, on gender, on age, and all of these things we see examples of in history, in the Shastra. We see examples of how there are spiritual teachers in all of these categories, people from lower class backgrounds, supposedly lower class, like Haridas Thakur, he was from a Muslim family, which at the time was considered very, very low on the social order. But he was a spiritual teacher, a spiritual master. And then we see even age doesn't matter, right? So there was this story that I like. With Prabhupada, in 1971,
they were in India,
Prabhupada and some of his disciples, and Giriraj Swami tells the story that the Chief Justice of Madras came to visit Prabhupada, and at the time there was this small girl who was 3 years old, her name was Saraswati, who I'm sure you encountered in the readings. She was the first child born in Islam. She's the daughter of Malati Prabhu. When the Chief Justice of Madras came to visit Prabhupada, Prabhupada had a little statue of Krishna, a little deity of Krishna with him. And he wanted to demonstrate to the Chief Justice of Madras what it looks like when someone is feeling transcendental anxiety and separation of Krishna, just like the Goswamis did. So he took this little deity of Krishna and he said, Saraswati, and he showed her, look, it's Krishna. And then he sort of slipped it behind his back without her noticing. And he started asking her, where is Krishna? Where is Krishna? And she became more and more distraught. And she was searching the room, looking behind. You know how children, they go around and look at everybody's hands, anybody holding. And she became very bewildered in her search for Krishna. And then a devotee said to her, trying to help her, you know, she was getting a little confused, and so a devotee said, Saraswati, who has Krishna? Who has Krishna? To kind of give her, and she thought, oh, who? And so then she immediately ran back to Prabhupada and said, Prabhupada has Krishna, Prabhupada has Krishna. And he revealed the certificate from behind his back, the devotee of Krishna. And this was his way of demonstrating to this important person, right? Chief Justice of Madras was there, and he was using a three-year-old girl to instruct. Giraswami says he was creating a situation where a three-year-old girl could instruct a chief justice. So age we see examples of how age is not a disqualifier for being able to inspire others and be able to be a guru. In the most, I'm speaking about the most general guru in the sense of an instructing guru, anybody can be, right? We're talking about that first, and then we'll talk about initiating gurus. But the other example of a child, and we can think of many, but another one is Prahlad Maharaj, who became a spiritual master to his classmates. And he taught them all how to chant, and he became their first guru in spiritual life. Just a little sound check. Is the microphone okay?
Yeah.
Okay. Then we have examples of people who are not even literate who became spiritual masters. And an example of this is Gorky Shordas Babaji, who is not even an educated person, but he became the spiritual master of a personality who was so brilliant and so educated that he could read something once and it would stick in his mind forever. And that was Bhakti Siddhanta, Prabhupada's spiritual master, right? So he took initiation from Gorky Shordas Babaji, who was not educated and who was not literate. So, and there's other examples of this in our sampradaya, our civil system, succession of personalities who are not materially educated becoming spiritual teachers. Then we have examples of women who became gurus. The general one that's often mentioned is Janava Devi, the wife of Lord Nityananda. But there's another personality who I want to mention here. Her name is Ganga Mata Goswami. And I took this from a little biography of her from Satyaraj Prabhu. So this every day she lectured on Srimad Bhagavatam. Her classes would become popular, attracting eager listeners from miles around. And she was located in Bengal and Orissa areas. So people would come from miles around to hear her. Many people, including Brahmanas and King Mukundadev, took initiation from her. So I just wanted to mention that because in the cultural context of the time, it was more common to see people who lectured on Srimad Bhagavatam in male bodies. But here she's giving Srimad Bhagavatam lectures and attracting many eager listeners from all around. So that's another example of something that's not a qualification for a guru is gender. Another example is a person who inspired someone who was in a female body, and she was also having an employment that was considered lower. She was a prostitute, or what we would call today a sex worker, and her name was Chintamani. And she actually, so there's a story of, who here knows the story of Vilvamangala Thakur? Are there some people who don't know the story? Okay, so just briefly, there was this person named Vilvamangala who was very, very obsessed. He had developed this obsession with this woman, Chintamani. So he became, and I think all of us can relate in our own way of some kind of material obsession, whether it's an obsession to get a new iPhone or whatever it is, right? We become fixated on it and it becomes all-consuming. So he was becoming like that about her. And they had this relationship where he would go see her a lot. And, one day it was his father's funeral. So they had a cremation for his father. His father had just passed away. And even though that was taking place, his mind wandered. And of course, he started thinking about this woman, Chintamani. And so in that distracted space, he actually left his father's funeral ceremony early and left in, it was becoming dark, and he went to go see her, and it was starting to storm. So he had to cross, he went through all these difficulties to get to her. He crossed over a river to get to her. The water was flooding this little stream, and so he grabbed onto a log to pat what he thought was a log to cross this river. Then when he arrived, there was a wall. Her gate was closed, so he had to climb a wall to get to her residence, and he grabbed onto what he thought was a rope to get in. And when he finally entered her residence, she was shocked to see him. He was totally drenched, dirty. You can just imagine, like, he's been through a storm and a river and up a wall and just stumbling through the dark to get to her. And she said, oh my goodness, she was shocked. She said, what have you been through to get to me? And so they, in one version of the story, they go back to see, there's two different versions. One is where he discovers that he's holding onto a log is actually a body. It was a body that had been floating in the river, and he had grabbed onto that to go across. And then the rope that he thought was a rope was actually a serpent, a snake. And the other version of the story, they go out together, they discover that together. So either way, Chintamani was actually a saintly person, despite her occupation as a sex worker. She was somebody who was very pious and knew the ultimate goal of life. And so she took on the role of spiritual teacher, spiritual guide for Bilvamangala by telling him, if you had as much devotion for the Supreme Person as you do for me, you would be able to become liberated in this one life, like you would, that earnestness that you have. And she completely opened his eyes, that Oma Jnana Timirandasya, Jnana Njana Shalakaya, right? She opened his eyes with the torchlight of knowledge, reminding him, oh my goodness, he had a moment of revelation. And I think we've all had that in this life, right? That moment where someone says something and it really resonates. And you think, oh my goodness, I've just been really kind of covered over. So distracted. And then someone says something that really helps us on our spiritual journey. So he became very indebted to her. He went on his way, and his journey continues, the story continues. Later on, he became a very advanced devotee of Krishna, and Bilvamangala Thakur, and he wrote many wonderful books about Krishna. In one of them, Krishna Karnamata, I believe. So in that text, he actually, there's a verse where he thanks, he acknowledges his spiritual teacher, this devotee in this prostitute role had helped him, and he acknowledges her in the text. So that that demonstrates how even your occupation is not a necessarily a disqualifier, as long as you have developed sincere desire to know Krishna and to be able to share that with others. So when it comes to initiation, like those who are initiating gurus, Prabhupada has some very, I just wanted to, most of you already know this, but I wanted to mention his couple of quotes here about initiation. So he says, Prabhupada says in a letter, I want that all of my spiritual sons and daughters will inherit this title of Bhakti Vedanta, so that the family transcendental diploma will continue through the generations. Those possessing the title of Bhakti Vedanta will be allowed to initiate disciples. Maybe by 1975, all of my disciples will be allowed to initiate and increase the numbers of the generations. That is my program. So 1975, that's many years ago. And we're still aspiring to get to that space where everyone can become qualified to initiate. So then another quote he says, again, by 1975, in another letter, this was a year later, he says, all of those who have passed the above examinations will be specifically empowered to initiate and increase the number of the Krishna consciousness population. I like how he says that, the Krishna consciousness population. So Prabhupada was very generous in his vision of who he imagined becoming gurus who could initiate. So there's the Shiksha Guru, the one who teaches you through instruction, and then the Diksha Guru, who teaches by initiation, or who gives you initiation. So those are some quotes that we can think about. And currently, as you know, there's still an ongoing discussion about who's qualified to initiate in ISKCON. So hopefully, with time, those quotes will manifest for Srila Prabhupada. So there's different categories. Just as there's different types of devotees, there's the very beginner devotee, there's the one who has become more advanced and who has more realization of Krishna and so on, all the way up to the greatest devotees of the Lord, the gopis of Vrindavan, Srimati Radharani, right? So there's these degrees of devotion of devotees. Similarly, there are degrees of spiritual masters, of gurus, of those who have who eventually can get the title of Jagat Guru, right? We call Prabhupada Jagat Guru, the one who is the guru of the entire world, because of his development of his own spiritual development, his depth of realization of Krishna and his character. So if we go to university and say we're in a university class, who here is in currently enrolled in college or university? Okay. So a few hands, right? So you know that when you're registering for a semester, you can choose your courses and then you can go and search your professors, right? You can even look on ratings. I think it's called ratemyprofessor.com or something like that. And you can search, like, oh, do I really want this person? And then in those ratings, you can see whether they're a good professor or not. And what I was thinking about, there's a difference between choosing a mundane teacher, a teacher who's going to teach you a mundane course, and a spiritual teacher or a guru. And so what's often missing in our choice of, like, if I'm going to choose a professor, I'm going to look for someone who knows their stuff, right? Someone who has their knowledge and who's able to impart that history or science or whatever it is. But what we don't often, what's not as important, especially if someone's hiring, let's say someone's hiring a teacher, the most important to them is what that person knows intellectually, what they've done with their teaching career. What's not talked about as much is their character as a person. How do they live their life when they're not on the podium talking to the students at UF, right? What are they doing behind the scenes that's creating their whole character? Who are they like? What are they like as a person? So when we're thinking about choosing a spiritual teacher or looking at someone as a guru, as a person who can inspire us, we need to, first of all, see whether they know about Krishna. But additionally, we have to look at their character, what makes them qualified to be a spiritual teacher. So there's a wonderful verse in the Nectar of Instruction. It says, a sober person who can tolerate the urge to speak, the mind's demands, the actions of anger, and the urges of the tongue, belly, and genitals is qualified to make disciples all over the world. And you notice with this verse and the previous ones that I mentioned of Lord Chaitanya and Prabhupada, that there's never any disclaimers like, oh, you have to be Indian, or you have to be white, or you have to be a man, or you have to be rich. Or there's none of those material disclaimers. It's just anybody who has attain this character of a spiritual person who has the ability to control their speech and not just speak whatever, you know, like the urge to speak and their mind's demands, who's able to rein in their desires and not act on them, that person is qualified to make disciples all over the world. So there's also this book, which I'm sure you've all encountered, Vaishnava Behavior, 26 Qualities of a Devotee. And there's that verse that this book lays out in great description, in great detail. And the verse talks about the different qualities of a Vaishnava. So all of those, we can look at that list. For example, devotees are merciful, humble, truthful, equal to all, right? Those are lists that we can look at to see whether someone is qualified as a spiritual teacher, whether I want this person to be my guru, whether he's Diksha or Shiksha guru, whether I want this person in my life to inspire me, whether they're living up to these qualities. And of course, like we mentioned, there's different degrees. So there's going to be some who have attained the greatest quality, the greatest character of all, the most humble, you know, like that. But as long as we see someone who's sincerely wanting to serve Krishna and who really wants to share about Krishna and who is really attempting to be these qualities, then they're qualified to be our superior, our teacher. So some of the qualities, the main quality I'm going to mention, and then we'll see if there's any questions and comments, but the main character trait or qualification of a guru that seems to be the most important is humility. No desire for recognition. So a guru, like someone who is in that role of guru, is always turning back and looking back towards their spiritual master and saying, all the credit goes to my spiritual master. I am just a servant. And they remain, Prabhupada calls it, remaining a fool in front of your spiritual master. Never feeling like I know it all and I am now a guru. So I've been to India quite a number of times, and a few times I was at a retreat, a japa retreat where it was held, this was years ago, but it was held in an ashram just in order to have a space for all the devotees. They would rent out an ashram of another guru, like he was no longer alive, but he was a guru who had a following in India. And I remember at one point, so we all stayed in the rooms there, they had a big facility. And my sister and I went to explore the little temple area. And we walked in, and along all the walls were huge, blown-up photographs of this person. Some of them, he was hugging Radharani Krishna, and others, he was hugging Lord Chaitanya, or just like looking very, very ecstatic, and his hair flowing. And the whole place was just, it was all about him. It was all about this person. And both my sister and I, we felt creeped out, if that's the expression, you know, we call it creeped out. We felt so creepy. Just there was a feeling in the air just being there that it's all, it was this pride, this kind of egocentric approach to spiritual life where it's all about the guru who becomes the all in all. And if you think about Prabhupada, on the other hand, he was constantly emphasizing Krishna. Over and over, Krishna, Krishna, Krishna. If you take the database and search the word Krishna, how many times Prabhupada said Krishna in all his lectures, always taking us back to Krishna. He did, of course, he did want to instill in everybody that he is the founder Acharya, and he did that because of wanting to keep the society together, serving under the common goal of Srila Prabhupada's teachings. Otherwise, it could become very fragmented. Imagine if every guru in ISKCON became their own individual, powerful person, and they had their own temple with photos of themselves all around. You know, it would create a lot of dissonance. The Prabhupada saw that over and over, how there was a need for a singular acharya so that there was cohesiveness and that we would all stick together. So So in that sense, he said that everybody should write on the books, Thandra Charya is from Srila Prabhupada. But in his actual teachings, he didn't speak about himself much. We know little bits of what he said here and there about his personal life, but Prabhupada was mostly speaking about Krishna. And that's a real humility. And and this just one thing I want to leave. Okay, so yeah, one other thing I want to leave you with is an example of someone who didn't do this, who was arrogant, was Vomaharshana. So you know when all the sages of Naimishiranya got together and they were going to hear from, this is where Srimad Bhagavatam, setting the scene for the Srimad Bhagavatam. They were going to hear from this great person, Vomaharshana. So they had him seated on the seat to teach and instruct everyone else, right? And when Lord Balaram, who is actually the original spiritual master, the original person who could help us come to Krishna, when he entered into that arena, everyone stood up with respect. Everyone was honoring him and glorifying him and appreciating him, just showing common courtesy, right? And as soon as Vomaharshana, when Vomaharshana saw Balaram enter, he didn't do anything. He just kind of stayed there on the seat. And his mood, Balaram could see the mood, his inner mood was of arrogance, like he didn't need to stand up to respect Lord Balaram. And Balaram, out of his great kindness, he wanted to set the example that this is not okay for a guru to be arrogant and to think that they're full of themselves, right? And also to remove him from that position so that the sages of Naimisharanya could hear from someone who is actually qualified in character and qualified in knowing of Krishna. So he took a piece of kusha grass, dried grass, and he just touched Vomaharshana, and just with that act of touching Vomaharshana with the grass, Vomaharshana died. So this is a very important story because, and I was talking to my father about this the other day, this past time, and he had a really interesting insight that I wanted to share with all of you because I never thought of this. So, you know how we hear that verse in Shikshastakam, we have to be lower than the strong and discreet, right? That's the real qualification of a spiritual master, to develop that humility. And what did Balaram use to kill Vomaharshana? A straw, right? And so it's in some ways quite humorous too. He's putting him in his place and reminding all of us that we need to be lower than the straw on the street in our mentality, in our mood of being the servant of the servant. And so I just thought that was an interesting thing I never thought about. The weapon that he used was a piece of grass. So something for all of us to aspire for is to develop more and more humility so that we can become better and better servants. And then if Krishna wants us to be in that role of sharing with others and teaching others, then we will be happy to serve in that way. And actually, like Prabhupada was saying, every one of you already can do that. You can already be a guru to someone else on their spiritual journey. So I would like to end there and see if there's any questions or topics of discussion.
Can you hear me? No?
Yeah.
Okay. I was wondering, could you explain more on how it's a person who is engaged in sinful activities is the same person, like a prostitute or something like that?
Okay, that's a good point. Yeah, it's tricky. It's hard on our brain because we often want to categorize things, right? We want to categorize people. So if someone is not living up to a traditional a saintly life in the way that we have heard is important, then it can throw us off our game and think, well, that person can't be qualified. Throughout the teachings of Krishna consciousness, we hear again and again that all, Prabhupada actually emphasized again and again that all we need to do is add Krishna to our lives. And he even Prabhupada even made some radical statements that even someone who is a butcher, if they just chant Hare Krishna, they can become elevated. So there's ideals, there are ideals, and then there are also circumstances where someone will be, for whatever reason, will have to be in an occupation that's maybe not as conducive, and are not able to get out of it, and are not able to do something else. Still, that person can add Krishna. Krishna can always be added to any situation, to any occupation, any situation in life. And as soon as Krishna enters in the consciousness of that person's consciousness becomes purified. So even if that activity they're doing remains, they're still, that's just the mundane consideration. The real consideration is that Krishna has entered that person's consciousness and has started to purify them. It's not black and white, basically. So throughout the scriptures, we see examples of people who are not maybe living the lives that are ideal, but they still find ways to add Krishna. So that's just, I mean, this discussion could go further, but that's just, did that help at all?
Yes, thank you.
Okay, yeah. Any other questions or comments?
So I've been thinking lately about how we have so many Prabhupada disciples who are around, and if Srila Prabhupada himself were here, it would be so easy to have this mood of reverence and not get the same sense of complacency. Like with myself, we have such constant association of these Prabhupada disciples and other exalted devotees, and it's easy to take them for granted, thinking, oh, you know, there's Srila Prabhupada, and then there's his disciples. This is my mentality. So how can we develop a proper mood of respect towards these exalted devotees we have the association of?
Yeah, a really good question. Contemplating how to deepen our gratitude. One thing that comes to mind is, for myself, when we start seeing how the time factor is there whether we want it or not, and we start seeing people in our lives who are spiritual teachers, shiksha gurus, passing away, it's a really strong reminder that we need to take advantage of those who remain among us. And I think that if that hasn't happened yet, then that will happen for everyone, because death is certain in this world, right? So we will all be a day when we lose someone that's very close to us, and if we haven't appreciated them before the end, we will appreciate them after that happens. Hopefully we can develop that appreciation before by reminding ourselves of the temporary nature of this world and really trying to take advantage of those who are with us still. And if we can spend time, if we can find a way to connect with some of the devotees in the community, the Prabhupada disciples, the senior devotees who inspire us, and share our hearts, that will really deepen our affection for those persons. If we can share our struggles, if we can ask questions sincerely, if we can offer service. Like if we know, for example, I just saw in the newsletter for Lachua, there was a little post about a Prabhupada disciple who's in hospice right now, or not in hospice, sorry, in a nursing home. Yeah. And they were putting out a request to devotees to read to him. So that could be one way to, if we see those kinds of services open up, like, wow, this devotee doesn't have physical association of other devotees. He's all alone in a nursing home, especially now during COVID. So if we can call him and give him some inspiration and help, and in that way he'll inspire us and we'll inspire him. And those are some thoughts that come to mind.
Thank you.
If anybody wants to add anything to that.
It's just the thought that every generation of spiritual teachers and masters, they have their own unique contributions. So, Bhaktisiddhanta has his, Bhaktisiddhanta has his, Prabhupada, of course, had that. And also, like, Prabhupada disciples also had their own very unique contributions under Srila Prabhupada's teaching. So, we should, yeah,
yeah.
We should, it's nice to hear about those stories as well and really appreciate that, what all they did. So, it might be, yeah, of course, every disciple is always different from the guru. They have different personalities, they might have different people, but at the same time, they have unique contributions they have made. Of that. So that's something
we
can appreciate for each generation.
Yeah, somebody was saying, I forgot who said this, that every disciple of Srila Prabhupada is like a reflection of a particular quality or a particular aspect of Srila Prabhupada. So by getting to know these dedicated devotees, we learn more about Srila Prabhupada. And each one of them, like you said, is unique and they have their own particular contribution. Every devotee is unique, and every devotee has a particular relationship with Krishna that's just between them and Krishna. So by getting to know devotees in general, and then specifically senior devotees, we get new realizations about Krishna that we might not have had in our own life, because we're kind of tapping into what they're realizing, what their sweet relationship with Krishna and Guru is, you know, their relationship with Prabhupada. So it's by getting to know them on a personal level, like not just generalizing, oh, all Prabhupada disciples or all, but really knowing each one of them as their own individual person, what their realizations are, how they have felt about Srila Prabhupada in their life. And they're also, it's actually, I was thinking recently how, because there's been a lot of departures, the summer there's been a lot of departures, I was thinking how these disciples of Srila Prabhupada can really help us to understand what it means to serve in separation. Because they have first-hand experience of decades and decades of living Krishna conscious without the personal presence of Srila Prabhupada. And yet they feel so close to him. So we can ask them, how is that? And how can I, when the time comes when I lose all of you, all of my spiritual teachers, all my mentors, how will I be able to go on? And then they can give us tips on how to do that, because that's going to be our situation too, as a coming up generation who have to live in separation from so many of our Diksha Guru and our Shiksha Gurus. And yeah, so some food for thought. Thank you all so much for being here in my life, and I'm grateful for this opportunity. Hope you have a beautiful day. Arrival.
Arrival! Thank you. Thank you.